WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Spring has sprung, and we're getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. It is all presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have these sort of old school, if you recognize them from like 45 years ago, it's because these are the same artwork in the tickets. It's the Instant Lottery scratch-offs. We'll be giving these away at the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're going to be at Costas in early April, as well as Fadley's. I'm working on a new date with Fadley's to make sure we're at the old market. We had a little rescheduling going on there before the Ides of March, but we're going to get that back out on the road, including with our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. Do what I did over the winter. Get new windows, man. It's awesome. Keeping the bugs out, and keeping the kitty in, keeping the squirrels out. You buy two, you get two free. 24 months, 0% financing. Our friends at Window Nation. This is a guy, I'd love to have a crab cake with this guy. I have had some awesome Asian food, as well as some adult beverages on some of the breweries in the greater Portland area. He is out in Portland, Oregon. Never Oregon, as my eighth grade girlfriend once said. Don't call it Oregon. It's Oregon. He is out there doing Bizball Maury at Forbes Above and Beyond and all over the place and showing up in sports radio and various places, as well as playing the role of Malcolm Young in the rock and roll tribute AC/DC band Shoot to Thrill. We welcome Maury Brown back onto the program in front of an electric guitar, an acoustic guitar. The only thing that's missing there is a ball and a bat and a glove, Maury. I mean, I think baseball and rock and roll is where you are.
Yeah, man. I mean, if you can't tell by the way I look today, I'm doing the full on 90s grunge thing, man. It's cold and wet and damp. And yeah, man, I mean, got a pretty happening gig happening Friday. So, you know, and baseball's cruising up. There's a lot going on, man. There's a lot going on.
Before I get to baseball, I must say this because I got to give a plug out for anybody that does tribute bands, okay? My wife and I went on Saturday night to the Record Theater right here in Towson. We saw something right up your alley, REM cover band, Dead Letter Office, phenomenal. Had the singer on, Chris Sancarico, last week. Also, big New York Giants fan, grew up upstate. Had a great conversation about loving the band and Stipe and the old, you know, IRS. Like, we had a music conversation and a sports conversation. They played, and then the Unforgettable Fire played, which is a U2 cover band. So it was a back-to-backer. I'm sure you're doing an AC/DC Metallica night somewhere, or an AC/DC Floyd night, or whatever it is you're doing in Portland. But tribute bands, my wife said to me in the middle of things, she's like, just correct me, I don't want to call them a cover band. What's the word? I'm like, tribute. They're a tribute band, you know? So for you in being involved in this, it really is a beautiful thing when you can go see Get the Lead Out, or you can go see Almost Queen, or see anyone. There's a band here that a friend of mine, Farouk, is in. They do Journey songs better than anybody. I mean, really cool to go out and be a part of it. And it's made live music even more relevant, I think.
Yeah, man. I mean, it works a couple different ways. One, the price point's a lot cheaper than going to see some of these bands, or the fact that some of these bands play in, you know, stadium tours and may not come to your town. Some of the bands, of course, are no longer touring because, you know, members have passed away or whatever it is. But it's largely about nostalgia. Look, it's not high art, Nestor. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's anything grandiose that way. It's a lot of fun. It's entertainment. But yeah, I mean, the key difference between a cover band and a tribute is obviously you kind of dress the part. You really hone in on just one band and really, really, really work to get it just exactly as close to the record as possible. Cover bands give you a little more leeway with that. You know, you're largely in a club where it's dancing. So that's the big deal. You know, we're playing place we're playing.
Yeah, but they're a cover band. You're doing Stones and Mellencamp and Black. You're doing right. Okay. So that'd be more like a dance, more like a Friday night out at the bar. Tributes more, you can dance to it a little bit, but you know what you're stepping into. And when you do it well, how long your band been doing this? 15 years?
Oh my gosh. Dozen years, 12 years.
I mean, yeah. Once you fall into this and you start doing this and you can make some money, have some fun, shake your groove, show off your guitar skills, get to have a little, why AC/DC? I mean, I think you would prefer to be in a UFO cover band, right?
Oh, buddy. I picked that up too, Nestor. I picked up a Scorpions tribute. Both. No, I did the AC/DC thing because after, you know, they've got a 40-year catalog, and you can play 90 minutes of nothing but balls to the walls hits for the most part.
Did you learn a lot of, because I wondered this about the REM band. They broke out Cuyahoga. They broke out like real B-side stuff. And I'm thinking, well, you're an REM cover band. They only had 100 songs. You probably could really master 70 or 80 of them that aren't too weird or out of range or involving instruments that you can't play or whatever. But AC/DC, like, did you know Sink the Pink? Could you do Shake the Foundation? I mean, or did you just stick to, these are the 25 songs they want to hear. These are the ones we're going to do.
No, we got about 3 hours worth of stuff. But I mean, for, you know, like the upcoming show that we're about to do, it's, you know, in a hall that holds about 2,000. So, you know, it's a nice theater. And, you know, they want us to focus mostly on hits. So, I mean, there's some stuff we're doing, Flick of the Switch, which is nice. Kind of a cool one. We're doing Bad Boy, which is another one that's kind of a B-side. But most of the stuff is stuff you would know. I mean, it's a lot of stuff from Highway to Hell, a lot of stuff from Back in Black.
See, if I came to your show, I know you're doing Shoot the Thrill. I know you're doing, Highway to Hell. I mean, I know you're doing that. I would be looking more for, like, What Do You Do for Money, Honey? I would do you Have a Drink on Me? Do you do those?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Do you do Let's Get It Up?
Yep.
Oh, see, that's... That would be my special request. Let's Get It Up straight to the top.
Yeah, that is one of those ones that we, you know, occasionally drop it off the list. It's not in the next gigs one, but we rotate stuff in and out because after, like you said, after a dozen years, you're trying to mix it up. So, you know, we increased production. I went out, I've got now two full stacks, you know, Marshall stacks, and, you know, it looks the part. And, you know, I won't look like this, obviously, when I play, but.
Scorpions are getting there, right? I mean, so you're in a Scorpions band now too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I went out and bought Flying V's and look like Rudolph Schenker. I'll grow the handlebar mustache. And oh yeah, man, it's a gas. I'm really digging that one just because I get to do a bunch of leads after doing nothing but rhythm. I mean, Malcolm's a lot of fun. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I just get to hang back and basically, you know, do the platform for the guy that does the Angus, but the Scorpions things allows me, I'm doing about half the solos. So it's a good time.
Nice. I can't wait to hear you come out and do the Zoo. What's the name of the Scorpions tribute band?
Love Drive.
Love Drive. Perfect. Perfect. All of my German relatives will appreciate that. So Mari Brown is here. We usually talk baseball. So let's take this back to the beginning of our friendship and our relationship. You're in a non-baseball town, non-major league baseball town. You run up to Seattle. So it's further than you think, but closer than you want it to be. In general, you know, you've done that, but you were trying to lure baseball to Portland at one point. We've talked about this, the Nashville situation, where the Angelos boy or boys or mama, and where he is with the governor running around Sarasota taking BP last week here. But for this time of the year and ramping up, I know of no one that covers baseball or thinks about baseball more than you. What's on your mind? I mean, the World Baseball Classic, the pitch clock, you know, games ending weird because of the pitch clock and the shift. Wait, a fan, and here, we don't have the games. Masson doesn't put the games on. It's goofy, right? The whole network was set up for Angelos. We have no games. Once it starts 2 weeks from now and Terps are eliminated, we figure Lamar out, which Lamar, I'm all Lamar'd out. I'm happy to be talking about Malcolm Young and Rudolph Schenker because I'm Lamar'd out. At some point, that'll happen. But baseball, people are going to come through it. They're going to be like, oh, they changed the rules. They mixed it. Like, there's just a lot that's going to be different this year. I think even for somebody like you that follows it closely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the advantage that I had was that I had watched quite a few minor league games with the clock. And it does become transparent. Now, the broadcasts are kind of different because depending upon where you're watching, they'll put the clock as a bug on the screen. And so you're aware of when it's starting to wind down, you know, and they're all treating it different. SNY is doing it different than someone else is doing it. And Bally's doing it different than others, right? So
what do you mean, like at 10 seconds or 15 or 5 or whether it's up there the whole time, right?
Or why they're actually putting it in the actual score bug that's up above that shows where the runners are, the position, score, outs, all that. It's actually embedded in that graphic. Others are putting a camera just on the clock and either having it there the whole time or just when it gets to like 10 seconds. So it is something that's different, and it does, I think, add to people wanting to stick around and watch games. Now, I'm saying that anecdotally. I've had friends that are like not big baseball people go, you know, I think I can do this. The games are around, you know, 2.5 hours long now. I think I'm going to be more interested in this. And it just is a lot crisper. I mean, you know, Pitching Ninja, for those that don't know, that if you follow it on Twitter, they've done a couple of things. One was they showed, I can't remember who it was, Zach Greinke, I believe, a two-pitch sequence and overlaid the entire running of the Kentucky Derby over the top of it. I mean, that tells you how long it was for some pitchers and batters. And so it's changed a lot. I think the longest game now in spring training has been 3 hours and 15 minutes. I mean, it's a lot different. It's back to the way that it was. You know, for everybody's like, I wish they wouldn't change it. I don't like the idea of the clock, right? But it is reminds me a lot more of the games that we saw in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Well, you mentioned the Zach Greinke thing, and I did see that. And I would say that we talk about Mike Hargrove and, you know, the human rain delays. Ken Singleton around here was famous for picking imaginary rocks out of the batter's box and trying to toss pebbles out of Memorial Stadium. When one batter does it, when it's one at bat and it's five pitches or six pitches, whatever it would be, maybe even 8 or 9 pitches if it's full count and they're fouling it off, right? And you have that 8 minute at bat or whatever the hell it would be, that would just be god awful at that point. But it might be at a key point in the game. There might be a mound visit. There might be, you know, backing off. There might be pickoffs. I mean, there could be all sorts of things in a 1-1 eighth inning World Series game, right? I mean, it was strategically I'm talking about. But all of that drama and that moment where a guy steps out of the box and everybody catches their – we have all those moments that are part of the cadence of baseball. They're gone now. Ask for timeout, right? I'm going to ask for timeout, you know, get – ump's going to grant it or not. Sometimes a pitcher will groove a strike, right? That over 9 innings times 2 sides over the course of forever turned into where Mike Hargrove began in 1978 and some batter's box in Municipal Stadium to turning into 4-hour games, right? Like, not to mention pitching changes, all of the things that went on. And it got out of control. It feels to me like this is one thing that they've been on for 20 years and they finally are going to get Bud Selig and, you know, contraction back in the day, right? But this, to your point, it's a global change because it's for everybody. There's not going to be any more World Series is going to be pregnant pauses and timeouts and we're going to catch our breath and we're going to do all of the things that you would feel when that tension would get hot. You're going to have to play, like, you know, literally. And that's going to change all of it too, I think. And to your point, it's going to make every game faster all the time. There's no way to skirt it. And I think that that's the part of it that I didn't take into account, you know, in watching selected minor league games and the independent leagues trying and tinkering rules. I'm thinking now that it's here, this is going to happen in the same way that putting a dude on second base gets everybody home by 11 o'clock. I don't like the rule, but it ends the game in the same way that hockey doesn't go till 3 in the morning because they're going to play 6 periods, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a change. Like I said, I got used to it in about an inning and a half and I just preferred it. Now the postseason will be interesting, right? You talk about that. There's still going to be pauses in the game. I mean, look, man, we're still going to blow through a bunch of relievers. I mean, that's not going to change. So what you're, of course, trying to do is, I guess, look at it. I look at it more like this: the implementation of the shot clock in the NBA. You know, we got to that, and that sped things up. Now, NBA has its own pace problems. I mean, the last 2 minutes of any NBA game or any college game seems to take forever. But you just can no longer dribble it out. At some point, you got to shoot. And so I look at it that way with pitchers and batters in the box. What I don't want to see, and what the league is really trying to hone in on right now, is avoiding a game outcome due to violation of the clock. And that just is weird. And we had it happen. We had it happen really early on. Batter wasn't in the box. Bases were loaded, 2 outs, bottom of the 9th. The guy didn't get into the box. The umpire called and struck him out. And that's how the game ended. And that was a little bit weird. So you're looking to avoid that. And the league understands that kind of chaos is going to happen. We haven't seen that happen. I mean, we're still getting violations, but it's about, you know, at the first week, it was about two a game, a little less. So, you know, you're trying to make sure.
I think it's different for a 30-year-old than a 22-year-old right now, too, who's had it a little bit more, right? It's been more indoctrinated that it's not unfamiliar to Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson around here, but it might be very unfamiliar to, you know, Verlander.
Yeah. You know what? The strange thing about this, Nestor, is that some of these guys that are veterans, Max Scherzer, for one, he's trying to use it to his advantage. He honestly believes that by changing the cadence, because the batter will go, well, he's got to throw it right in between here. So he's going to wait until the end of the clock, or he's going to do
it early.
Scherzer
knows what he's doing ahead of time. Scherzer knows what he's doing the minute the umpire goes ball or strike on the first pitch. Like, you know what I mean? These guys that are scientists, they have no problem working quickly, I don't think, because they're not confused about what they're doing, right?
Yeah, and I think the key thing about it is there's the clock, but there's the other changes. And when you put it all together, I think it makes for more what I see is more old school baseball, more station to station. You're going to start to see, I think, more balls through the middle, more balls basically squirting through the infield. You're going to start to see, because the bases are bigger, you're about 4.5 inches shorter, you should theoretically see more steals, because now you can't throw to first. You can only throw to first twice. If you don't throw the guy out, it's a balk, and the guy gets awarded, you know, second base or third base. So theoretically, you should see more steal attempts. You should start to see more, you know, I'm going to look for the, you know, right fielder throwing to third, where you got, you know, you think about Clemente, or you think about Ichiro, or you think about Vladimir Guerrero Sr., those throws from right field to third, you know, when you get these incredible putouts, you're going to start to see more weight on that. So it's going to be different, man. And you know, theoretically, you should see more action. And I'm all about that. Strikeouts have been way up. Batting averages have been down. That doesn't make for good baseball in my mind.
Use the word action, right? Like more action. That's what I was going to say. Just more guys on base, more things happening that aren't strikeouts or home runs or pitchers grabbing their nuts or catchers coming out to visit the mound and, you know, TV commercial. It's all of that. We've been yelling about it for a long, long time. You and I have gone gray since all of this has happened. It finally feels like it's here. And you know what else feels like it's here, Mari Brown? It feels like the Orioles' relevance has arrived to some degree. Mm-hmm. You and I have known each other a number of years. I'm not sure we've had a relevant baseball conversation during our friendship, because it's been in the last decade we've known each other. But this feels to be different. Luke has indicted them. And listen, incompetence never takes a day off. I've learned this with ownership. Incompetence is its DNA. And it's Angelos, and it is what it is. And I don't need to rewrite the book on the Peter principles and their money and who's really going to own the team when it's all done. But we're in a major negotiation here for leasing and where the team's going to be and who's going to own it, and who's going to run it. The brothers suing. We have all that going on. But Luke really indicted them in a big way Luke loves the team. He said they could have done more. They should have done more. Where do you stand on the outside of that with this baseball thing where a lot of teams don't do anything ever? Oakland, Tampa, you know, even when Kansas City wins, they tank. Pittsburgh gets there for 5 minutes. These other franchises that aren't Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers, you know, we'll see how long the Astros can keep this going or other places. But once you get to that point where you can be competitive, the fans change and they're like, let's go buy players, man. You said. They didn't buy anything here. And they still might be good enough to be a playoff team, right?
Yeah, I think that for the Orioles last year, it was winning in spite of what ownership and the general management did, which was unfortunate, because I think that it sets that tone for, oh, they're going to, you know, they're going to be there again. And I don't know if you can guarantee that. Look, I mean, it's pretty obvious with what's been going on recently with ownership traveling to the Battery in Atlanta to go look at it, and traveling, you know, with, you know, political figures to go ahead and look at it, that what's really going to happen here is they're going to try and develop around the ballpark. That'll be the excuse that then they'll have the money, but there's no guarantee, right? There's just no guarantee. But if they're going to start to use Atlanta as the barometer, then you better look at how they conduct business on the field, because you don't get people coming to your ancillary development around your ballpark if your team's not doing well. And look, man, we haven't even touched on it. As the regional sports network model changes, teams are going to be on the hook for being able to have to put on decent teams. And you don't have a decent team, man, you are really going to be in a difficult situation. You really are. You're going to be in a position to where if you go direct to consumers and your team isn't very good, then you're going to have trouble.
Well, I mean, we saw the 0.0s that the Astros put up, you know, before Astro Ball, and they started cheating, and Elias got his gig here, and the Orioles were at Nowheresville. Mari, it's staggering to me because, you know, I remember when there weren't no Nationals, and when antitrust, and they were going to get the team, and there was going to be a network. And I mean, I was here for every rub, every tug, every push, every pull, you know, every visit from Bob DuPay down to try to get this network together, and the network was going to benefit both teams. Yeah, Nationals have had a parade down there, and they busted it up, and the old man's dead, and they're going to sell the team. They can't even figure out how to sell the team because of a business transaction they went into with a maniac 18 years ago whose kid has control of the team now. They can't do anything because of all the money that's really in dispute over two decades of the Angelos family taking the money, siphoning the money out of the regional sports network. And now the regional sports network is sort of a burnt up car at the end of a highway. A little Springsteen reference there for you. I mean, it's like after a barbecue. Like, what do we salvage from this network that was never built on anything other than my 98-year-old dead mother's cable television bill, knowing they were siphoning a couple $100 a year out of every single pocket in the region that happened to have cable television, not to mention six other ancillary states before the Nationals got involved. So I've been on this business thing from the beginning. It is fascinating that this family, that somehow the governor and the mayor and the city that's decayed in the area around me where I lost $250,000 in investment of property over 20 years, they're just going to like annex and like raise the Atlanta thing under the guise that we're going to make this family wealthier or the next group wealthier. If they get it done under the bridge and daddy stays alive, this would all roll into the value of the team. He's trying to make his team worth $2 billion more off of state money and building an area. And they've never done anything, not even this offseason, to spend 20 or 30 million bucks and try to make the team a little better. You know what I mean? Like, the math is so sideways, Mari, for how much money Masson really brought in over the 18 years and whatever happened to that money. It's really amazing.
Yeah, I mean, look, the entire regional sports network model is being upended. This thing with Bally Sports, which is Diamond, you know, it's the name of a Bally Sports Group, the Diamond that owns it. Those regional sports networks going under, the AT&T sports networks going under, those two are basically 2/3 of the regional sports networks for the league. And so Masson is on borrowed time. Nesson is on borrowed time. You know, maybe some of these others might hang out a little bit longer, but eventually it's direct to consumer, and you just can't sit and collect money out of the TV bundles. Now, look, the league is going to try and go ahead and shop this stuff, and linear television still matters to them. It still matters to most everybody. But I mean, again, it is going to come down to this thing. You just can't sit around and collect the money and do nothing without having a decent product on the field. If you're going to go direct to consumers, it's like anything else. I don't know about you, man, but my, you know, Netflix or Hulu or Apple or whatever it is, right? If you're not giving me good content, well, I'm going to start to spend my subscription money elsewhere.
Well, you know what? I'm off screen here, but you know, I love to have these belt buckles. I collect these Pacifica belt buckles. So I'm grabbing a couple right now. So here's what I'm going to show you because you're going to appreciate this, all right? Because you're the right age, all right? Do you remember this album? You remember this album
Oh,
right
yeah.
here? Yeah. Well, tell everybody about what belt buckle I'm holding up and what album that I'm showing you right here, all right?
That's the cover for Frampton Comes Alive.
Okay, and he was the biggest guy in the world, right? I mean, everything was good, right? Product
Yeah.
was good, right? They got rid of Machado, you know, things went away. Maybe you get rid of Lamar, you know, LeBron goes away, Michael Jordan. And all of a sudden, you're releasing I'm In You. You know what I'm saying? So when I'm In You comes out, you know, it's a different. Mario, you got to admit, it was a different product for Peter after that, right?
It was. I went to both tours. It was not the same. It was not the same.
You never know what you're getting on this show, do you, Mari? When you sign up
No,
with me, you love the
stuff right
unpredictability of
there.
this.
That's quality right there, man.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna be thinking about, so Frampton Comes Alive was the first concert I ever went to. Day in the Green in Oakland. That was amazing. But
Man, that's a legendary show, right?
yeah, it was UFO, Gary Wright, Fleetwood Mac. First tour with Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks and Fleetwood Mac.
There's
And
video of that show, right, with Fleetwood Mac for sure, right?
yeah, I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
I've
There's some great,
seen that, yes.
sick Jim Marshall photo of Frampton jumping and splaying his legs out in the crowd behind him. It's a black and white photo. I'll send it to you sometime.
I've seen footage from that
Yeah.
specific show because Frampton was the biggest star in the world that day, right?
Yeah, I mean, so your analogy is pretty good, you know. I will say this, what the Angelos family is doing is not dissimilar from what Liberty Media is doing with Atlanta, or what John Fisher is trying to do with the A's, or what the Cardinals have done. Everybody is trying to do the quote unquote ballpark village, you know. It allows them, that's off their baseball books. It's money that they collect. They take the advantage of walk up for games and concerts. It does not go on the Orioles ledger. So if you own a development around your ballpark, you get to earn that money and make that money. And for those that don't know, Liberty Media, because it's a public company, publishes that information. This is another reason why they're looking to spin that off into its own thing. But it, you know, you can see the amount of money that the Battery makes. And it's not small. I mean, it is, and it does not sit on the Braves books. This would be the same drill for the Orioles. So look, I mean, if you're going to sit there and go, we're just going to put a substandard product on the field and just make our money over here on the side, that's not something that's very hopeful. Again, I hope that the silver lining to this RSN collapse for the regional sports networks is that teams realize if you're going to go direct to consumers, you better put a good product on the field. And that speaks largely to the Orioles.
Well, I mean, I have no problem believing that your Scorpions tribute band, as well as your AC/DC band, Shoot the Thrill, is putting a good product up on the stage, much like what we saw at the Record Theater last weekend. I love hanging out with you. Our time is short. I will try to use belt buckles in the future to sort of bring life together and baseball together. And at some point, I'll ask you about this F1 thing that you're all worked up and wet about out in Las Vegas. And I got JT the Brick all soaked up about that, too. I'll bring him on. Lamar. Anything on Lamar you want to say? Because I mean, you do cover the business of sports. Real quick, Lamar, is he going somewhere? Or is he staying? What do you think?
Boy, I don't know, man. I really don't. I mean, it's such a complicated thing, Nestor. I don't know. I think it could go either way. I really do.
All right. Show me the way, Mari Brown. Show me the way. You're in me, I'm in you. Before and after. You know, I mean, just remember it all. Things happen quickly. You know, it takes a whole career to build something. It just takes
Yep.
It just takes one Xanadu to wreck it, you know. I am Nestor. We are WNST, getting you ready for baseball season, getting you ready for our Maryland Crab Cake Tour as well. The Maryland Lottery, bringing it out. We got the instant scratch-offs as well as our friends at Window Nation, 866-90 Nation. And I also want to give some love to our friends at Coons Baltimore Ford, keeping you abreast of all the breaking news. Luke's got his finger on the button for all things Lamar. And Dennis will be here on Thursday and again on Sunday. We got March Madness. I'm going to be at Barstool Sports Restaurant at the Hollywood Casino in Perryville. Fantastic place to eat, drink, and watch the games at noon on Thursday for the Terps. If you're hearing this after that, God bless the Terps against Alabama. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Love having Maury Brown on. Make sure you go follow him at BizBallMaury. Stay with us. We're BaltimorePositive.com.